When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Gains for Girls podcast. Today's guest is one of the most important people of this next election cycle. His name is Tim Sheehy. He is running for U.S. Senate out in Montana. His opponent, Senator John Tester, is of course in the U.S. Senate now. His voting record, of course, as you can imagine, across the board, but specifically looking at issues, the cultural issues, such as if men can become women, his voting record is abysmal, asinine. He votes in lockstep with Senator Chuck Schumer. So this race is crucial in terms of flipping the Senate, which ultimately will be huge in the next 4 years or so, when hopefully we have a new administration in the White House. This is huge. It's important. He's amazing. He's a Navy SEAL, meaning, of course, he has served this country. He knows what's at stake. There really could not be anyone more suited, more qualified to be running in his position. And so he is someone who we should all get behind. We should all champion. We should all support in any way and every way that we can. So make sure you check out the interview here with Tim Sheehy. Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining the Gains for Girls podcast. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to tell us a little bit about your background and ultimately what led you to running for U.S. Senate.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. And more importantly, thanks for all the critical advocacy work you're doing. You know, it's embarrassing that we as a country have to now have a discussion about the fact that there are two genders. You know, most of us took that for granted our entire lives. I mean, as far as I know, since the dinosaurs were around, there were two genders. But of course, now we have to have a national debate about it. So thank you for standing up. I know you've had to undergo a lot of harassment, physical, on social media, in every way possible. So thanks for undertaking the fight. But, you know, why I'm in the fight now, the political fight was, you know, I spent a lot of my life fighting as a Navy SEAL. My wife was a Marine. We both met in the military at the Naval Academy and we're both Division I athletes. She was a very competitive national level gymnast, became a, you know, Division I diver, you know, at the Naval Academy. So, excelled incredibly in female athletics and then became, of course, a U.S. Marine Corps officer. So, we met in the military. We saw each other about 45 days, spread across 6 years, during the wars, Iraq, Afghanistan, all over the place. I ended up getting wounded, so got discharged, and we started our business here in Montana from scratch. And it was a pure startup. Every cent we had went right into the business, all on black, really. And decided that we were going to start a company that took the technology that protected me on the ground in Afghanistan. We had aircraft above us with infrared cameras, electro-optic cameras, different types of sensors, and they'd provide us that real-time situational awareness that would protect us on the ground. And I was a team leader, so led hundreds of Americans, you know, all over the world, 5+ deployments, you know, hundreds of missions, and it was an amazing experience. Obviously, great days, terrible days, amazing days. The highs and lows of war are extreme, but was so honored to lead Americans to the field of battle all over the world. And would love to keep doing it. But after I was injured the final time, that was the end of the road. So when we started the business, I decided to take that technology that protected us on the ground in the war zone and apply that to other tasks. And about the time I was getting out, there was an incident in Arizona called the Yarnell Mountain Fire. And 19 firefighters, the Granite Mountain Hotshots, were burned alive and killed in that wildfire. And the reason was is they lost spatial orientation for where the fire was, where it was moving, and what it was doing. And they got disoriented, made a tactically wrong decision, and the fire, they thought the fire was going one way, it was going another way, and they all died, all 19 of them. There's a movie about it called Only the Brave. And I heard about that and realized if I could take the technology I had, if that team leader had what I had on the ground in Afghanistan, they'd still be alive. So I started my company, Bridger Aerospace, to do that. And I actually wrote a book called Mudslingers. All proceeds go to the firefighting community. I don't get any money, but it's about the history of firefighting from the air and all that stuff. So I started a company to protect firefighters from the air with the same type of technology I had as a SEAL team leader. I thought maybe one day we'd have 10 employees and, you know, a couple of planes, but I'm proud to say we've created about 450 jobs from scratch across all the companies we've spun out and created in the last 9.5 years, all veteran founding team. And it's been tremendously successful. It's been a great ride. And most importantly, our company still serves the country. You know, we're veterans who served, and we're a great example of the fact that when veterans get out, our service is not over. We can keep serving our country. And we've done that through building Bridger Aerospace, defending Americans all across the country from wildfire. We're in Texas now. We were in Texas fighting the Smokehouse Creek fire. We still have planes there. I was just there last week. And it was in that mission, fighting fire in Chico, California, in the summer of 2021. I was flying our scoopers. I fly all of our planes. I lead from the front. And while I was flying water bomber missions by day, by night, my pilots and I were working hard to get American citizens, allies, friends out of Kabul, out of Afghanistan, before they got murdered, burned alive, heads cut off, shot in the street. We abandoned those people who fought alongside us after the deadliest attack in American history. And in the wake of that, after we spent weeks and months getting people out, bringing our allies and American citizens home, spending our own money doing it, I realized, you know, the true rot we had going on in our government. It was the first time I'd ever been ashamed of being an American. And that's when I knew that it was time to get involved again in public service. And that's when I started to lean into politics, more as a donor and a host and a speaker. But then eventually what was asked, hey, you're pretty good at this. We have an important race coming up. Would you consider running? And a big decision for my wife and I. We have 4 young kids, 2 girls, 2 boys. But the way I see it, America is at a crossroads. We don't have a choice but to stand up. Just like you stood up after what happened to you, I stood up after I saw what happened to the sacrifice of me and so many of my teammates who fought. Many of them died. I carried them home in boxes. I refuse to let this country that we fought for slip away. And these things, you know, I believe we've gone beyond partisanship. This is just common sense. I mean, we're telling people that gender's fake. There aren't boys and there aren't girls anymore. Borders aren't real. We start to question what in the hell's going on, and we have to stand up and do something about it. So that's why I'm here. That's what got me involved. There are so many issues that are at play, and obviously we need to talk about women and the protection of women today. But that was the impetus to me to stand up and get involved. And I got 4 young kids, 4, 6, 8, and 10. And I refuse to hand this country over to them in the state it's in. So we're going to fight hard for it.
Oh my gosh. I knew you were a Navy SEAL. I did not know that your wife was in the Marine Corps. I had no idea your extensive background. This is incredible. You are the exact person who we need in leadership positions. And, you know, we hear people say all the time, left, right, leaning, everything in between. They say, you know, they're here to fight for America. But you have proven that you really know what it means to fight for America. You put your life on the line for this country, in terms of your leadership and your sacrifice and understanding your role. So, wow, that's incredible. And we thank you for your service, when serving, but even now undertaking this fight. And you were recently endorsed by President Trump, which is, of course, a huge deal. So how did that come about?
Well, you know, it goes back to something you said. We always hear from politicians that they're going to fight, and they're going to fight for this, they're going to fight for that. And as you know, with your experience going to these events, you know, being threatened, being physically attacked, very few of them have actually ever fought for anything on both sides. You know, they haven't fought. You know, they talk tough on TV, they tweet, and et cetera, et cetera. But how many of them actually fought? And then the whole point of fighting is to win. We fight and win. It's not just fight. I'm not just going to fight for America. I'm going to fight and win. And that's an important distinction because, you know, as I can say, the Japanese fought very hard in World War II. They were very brave. A bonsai charge into machine gun fire. They'd kamikaze their planes, but guess what? They lost. We need to fight smart. And we as American conservatives, we haven't been fighting very smart these past 2 years. We've been getting beat on many fronts. We need to fight and win. And that part of that's going to take a new generation of leaders. But as you said, very proud to be endorsed by the former president. You know, I supported him, you know, from the very beginning. As soon as he got in, there was no question. We had a great field of potential candidates. All those others were great Americans. We were lucky that they stepped up. But since the beginning, there's no question who the nominee was going to be. And I was very honored to have his support. And I think it's very simple. He wants to win this race. As you correctly pointed out, you know, John Tester is my opponent. I'm not running against John Tester. I'm running for America. I'm running to save this country. He just happens to be in the way. But the point is, President Trump knows we have to win this seat. If he's going to, when he wins the president, if he's going to get anything done, he needs a Senate that can pass his legislation to move America forward. So I think he wants to win. He looked at the potential candidate field and said, here's a smart young guy. You know, he's served his country. He's a successful businessman. He can win. And we were proud to get his support.
That's amazing. And you mentioned Senator John Tester. Recently, this week, actually, he voted in opposition of the, I believe it was called the Protection of Women and Girls in Olympic and Amateur Sports Act. It was an amendment introduced by Senator Tommy Tuberville, who, of course, is a coach, an athlete himself. And it wasn't actually even just Senator Tester. All 51 Democrats voted in opposition of protecting women and girls in sports. And so I've got to ask you, you know, do you feel like this represents the values and the ideals and the traditions of those who live in Montana?
No, it absolutely does not. And, you know, he bills himself as a dirt farmer. You know, how many dirt farmers do you meet think there should be 18-year-old men in the same locker room as 10-year-old girls? I mean, how many dirt farmers say, well, my wife's actually my husband? You know, it's ridiculous. And no, it does not reflect the values of the state. And, you know, we've been hearing for 60 years about how the Democrat Party is the party that's protecting women. This is a war on women coming from conservatives and white men and Republicans. We're out to get women. And now we have a party that can't even define what a woman is. You know, Justice Ketanji Brown in her Supreme Court hearings refused to define that a woman was a thing. She said, well, I'll have to talk to a biologist. I'm not a biologist. I don't think you need a biologist to tell you what's between your legs. So now we have a party that spent half a century telling us that they were the party protecting women, whether it was, you know, reproductive rights or you know, Title IX. Now they refuse to even admit that women exist. And if there was ever a war on women, that's it. And, you know, it goes beyond just boys playing girls sports. It's not just, you know, an 18-year-old swimming against another 18-year-old who can go faster, which is obviously terrible in and of itself. But as you correctly stated during your terrible experience, now on a high school sports team, you can have a 17-year-old man sharing a locker room with a young girl. I have two daughters. That should not be something that they have to endure. They go on a traveling sports team. They're going to share hotel rooms with these people. They're going to share locker rooms. They're going to be naked with them. They're going to be in the showers with them. Nobody wants to talk about these things, but that's the reality. We need to talk about the nitty-gritty of what these actual policies mean when they're rolled out, and that is that our daughters, my 8-year-old girl, I don't let them go in public bathrooms alone because anybody can walk in there. No longer are they going to be with a nice old grandmother who's going to help them out if they have an issue. There's going to be a man in there, and we saw in Alaska just last week or the week before at Planet Fitness when a woman walked in and there was a man shaving in the women's locker room and a young girl wrapped in a towel, clearly scared. And she went to the staff and said, get this guy out of there. And they kicked her out, you know, for standing up for a young woman and her comfort in a space she should feel at least relatively safe. She was the one punished. So this kind of insanity has to stop. And you're absolutely right. Senator Tester, it's just a fact. He voted against that. He voted against it, just like he voted against the Laken Riley Act, once again, protecting young women from violent illegal aliens, voted against deporting violent illegal criminal aliens, paying for them to be here. And so it's crazy.
And you're exactly right in talking about the reality of these things. It's not as simple as just being compassionate or empathetic or inclusive. These buzzwords, these virtuous things that in their true definition are wonderful things. It's not about that. Because what we're seeing is not compassion. And you mentioned Ketanji Brown Jackson, it's ironic that she was the, of course, sitting Supreme Court justice who said she can't define what a woman is. And recently, she went on the news to say she felt like our First Amendment rights were hamstringing the government. Precisely. That is actually precisely what our First Amendment rights are supposed to do. And you and I both know if our government can't abide or understand that, that's precisely why we have the Second Amendment. So there's no surprise in the fact that she said this recently either. But defining this word woman, to your point, admitting that women exist, which I love the way you phrased that because it's so true. Would you support, you know, defining sex as biological and ending these debates, which is something we've seen now undertaken in the U.S. House. I believe Representative Lesko and Representative Diana Harshbarger have taken under the Women's Bill of Rights, which is, of course, just a bill that codifies and defines these sex-based terms. Do you see that as something that, of course, is beneficial and necessary and urgent, I would add?
Well, I mean, first of all, of course, I would say there's no question I would support it. I think the challenge is, for me, philosophically, the fact that we're even having this discussion, I find completely ridiculous. And sometimes I have to wonder, is this intentional to distract us from other things, to make us have an argument and spend our legislative energy to pass a bill to say that women exist? This is from the party that says, follow the science, that spend the last decade telling us, follow the science, follow the vaccines, don't question masks, you know, putting a diaper on your face will save the world, stand 6 feet apart, don't question climate change, carbon emissions, blah, 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 follow the science. Yet apparently science doesn't include the fact that there are two genders. So the level of hypocrisy and insanity, I don't know what other word to use other than insanity. I mean, it's insane to stand there and talk to someone who's explaining to you with a serious face that women can't be defined and it's a societal construct. Last I checked, you know, you can't impregnate a man. It just doesn't work that way. So yes, of course, I would support the Women's Bill of Rights Act. But part of me says, you know, almost engaging in that legislative discussion is almost a surrender in and of itself. Like, we shouldn't have to have that discussion. There's absolutely no reason America, the land of the free, where we're supposed to be ruled, you know, by a government or, you know, we're supposed to have a government that doesn't rule the people. It's by the people, of the people, for the people, shouldn't have to pass an act to acknowledge that women exist. But unfortunately, that's where we are. And, you know, we're ruining the day. We're ruining 60 years, you know, of Marxist educational indoctrination. That's what we're seeing. You know, yeah. Our education system has been corrupted for so long, and it was intentional, and it's still happening. I'm very pro-education. I want my kids to learn and, of course, go to college if they can and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, what we're seeing now is no longer education. It's indoctrination, and now we're feeling the results of that.
To your point about where we are now as a society, where we have to even, you know, give a definition to these words, words we've never struggled to understand, to your point, since the dinosaurs were roaming the earth. But we do, and understand there are no limits if we are willing to deny the most basic of truths. If they can tell us how to think and what to say and how to feel on this topic, we're done. We're done as a nation, unless we get leaders in like you. You mentioned you have young kids, daughters and sons, and you mentioned, you know, the future we're leaving them with. I mean, you must worry about this, right? Our elected officials and society as a whole, this future that's being left behind for your kids, my generation, to ultimately deal with.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'm so worried. That's why I'm doing this. And I can promise you, you know, being a senator was never a life dream of mine. Sitting in a building arguing with a bunch of 80-year-old men doesn't sound like fun. I'd much rather be flying water bombers and working my farm and ranch with my four beautiful kids and my awesome wife. But, you know, we can't stand by and watch this continue. And part of the reason we're here, you know, I was on the radio show just day before yesterday. Maybe it was yesterday. Can't keep all the days straight. I'm all over the place. But, you know, I was asked, what's the greatest threat to America? And I said, apathy. Now, I truly believe apathy is the greatest threat to our country and our society. It's not China. It's not Russia. It's not, you know, diseases or cyber or Bitcoin or whatever the hell you want to talk about. It's apathy. I mean, the average American is just like, you know, whatever. You know, 6 to 1, 18-year-old kids last year would rather lose their right to vote than lose their access to TikTok. That's a huge problem for our country because our constitutional republic, which is what we are, we're not a democracy. We're a constitutional republic, which is very different. A constitutional republic depends on an engaged and educated citizenry, a citizenry that cares, a citizenry that gives a shit about what's going on in their country. And right now we don't. Right now, half of Americans vote if we're lucky. You know, we can't get people to join the military because they say, why would I fight for this country? I don't even like it very much because I've been told my whole life how evil it is. Why the hell would I join up and fight for it? So we have so much apathy in so many walks of life. And unfortunately, you and I are a great example. It took traumatic events for the two of us to step up and get involved. It just did. You know, you had to have a terrible experience, you know, with a man pretending he's a woman swimming. I had to have a terrible experience watching a war I fought and friends die and something betrayed by our own government to stand up and get involved in. And unfortunately, that's where we're at as a country. But folks like you and I can start getting engaged, running for office. You know, Congress is the least popular institution in America at about 4% approval rating. Nobody likes Congress. And I come from the military and small business, which have very, very, they're the top institutions. People love the military and small business. So why would I jump from the best pool to the worst pool? It's because we have to. And I think good people like you and I that aren't career politicians, aren't career lawyers and lobbyists, we can step up and say, you know what, we're going to get into this organization. And I know you're not running for anything, but I think you should. We're going to get into this organization and we're going to make it better because this is where the rubber meets the road. And we better start here. Otherwise, you know, this country that's been so great to so many people for so long isn't going to be around much longer.
Absolutely. Tell us about your campaign very briefly, you know, the issues you're running on. I want to hear about the feedback you're getting. I imagine the people of Montana are ecstatic with this. I don't picture Montana as a place, you know, being from Tennessee, I'm from a conservative state, haven't spent a ton of time up there, but I imagine the people of Montana are not overly enthused with Senator Tester. So I want to hear about the feedback you're getting and how you plan on representing, again, the people of Montana. Mm-hmm.
Well, the feedback's been great. Of course, I'm a relative nobody. When I announced 8 months ago, I had about 4% name ID, and 3% of that's because there was a judge in Missoula named Sheehy, and that's who everyone thought I was. So functionally, I was nobody. And now we're tied to leading in the polls, and it's been a good constant, you know, one direction in the trend line up and to the right the whole time. So we're making good progress. Feedback's been great. People, you know, there's frustration with Senator Tester. There's also this frustration with, like we discussed, all these broader issues in America that people are starting to wake up and realize, you know, what the hell is going on in this country? How can we be giving free housing, free food, free transportation, free health care to illegal immigrants when we have homeless veterans committing suicide in the street? You know, how can we be telling our kids that girls are boys and boys are girls? How can we print money six times faster than the economy is growing and be surprised there's inflation? You know, we're waging a war on American energy and then acting surprised when we have $6 diesel. So there's a broad dissatisfaction. There's also a hunger for leadership. There's a hunger, I think, across America, but we've definitely felt it across Montana. They want leadership. And the top issues have been pretty clear, actually. I've been very surprised. We're a big state. If you turn Montana end to end, you know, from the northwest corner to the southeast corner, it's almost as far as Florida to New York. It's a long distance. We're a big state. Fourth largest state. But even across that vast expanse, it's been very consistent. Number one issue is the border and all the downstream effects of that: fentanyl, drugs, crime, human trafficking. We feel it here in Montana. Even though we're a northern border state, we are having a southern border problem, and Montanans are feeling that. Second issue, economy and inflation. You know, Montana's a big state. People got to drive a lot. Sometimes 2 hours to work, you know, our mailbox at our ranch is 11 miles down the road. So $6 diesel means, you know, it's going to be $50 to go check your mail. So, you know, there's a lot of impacts. Montana's cost of living over the past 3 years during COVID, when everyone watched Yellowstone and wanted to flee the big cities and go to Montana, cost of living went through the roof. And for working class Montanans who weren't making out of state Zoom job wages, that was making Montana unaffordable to live in. And when you're telling people they can't afford to live in their own hometown, I mean, they start to look around saying, what the hell's going on? I mean, how can I not afford to live in my home? So cost of living is going up and people are feeling the real income pinch that's coming from this very inflationary environment. That's, of course, a result of Bidenomics. So that's issue number two. And issue number three, I would say, kind of wraps up broadly more the culture war issues you and I discussed. So just the common sense issues of saying, why are we arresting cops and releasing criminals? Why are we kicking veterans on the street to be homeless and we're getting free housing to immigrants? Why are we telling our daughters that boys are now going to play in their sports? Just, you know, the litany of issues, of common sense issues that are really frustrating a lot of Americans. And I think we have an opportunity as a Republican Party nationally to really redefine the conversation. We've been on our heels for a long time. We've allowed the media, you know, the triad of the media, the internet companies, and the Democrat Party to define the narrative and put us in the corner and beat the hell out of us on, you know, all these cultural issues were defined as racist, xenophobic, anti-women. And I think now people are waking up realizing, you know, who's the real anti-woman party? The party that's trying to defend young girls or the party that says young girls are fake? You know, who's the real party that's trying to defend working class Americans? the party that panders to them, or the party that, you know, that is actually trying to defend their wages, defend their jobs, defend their homes. So I think we have an opportunity as a party to reboot our message, and we have to take it. I don't think we've quite taken it yet as a party. I think as Republicans, we need to make sure our message is not just one of grievance and anger and frustration. It's one of hope and one of the future, because we're in a tough spot as a country, no question, but we've been in much worse spots before. You know, it wasn't that long ago in human history, we were the deadliest war in American history was the Civil War. We were slaughtering each other, hundreds of thousands. You know, the Great Depression, people declared American capitalism was dead. You know, the American economy was a failed experiment. Well, they didn't watch the rest of the movie. Look at us now. You know, 1968 was an extremely divisive year. You know, years prior, we had one president assassinated, another one, a candidate assassinated. So, brothers, of course, the Kennedys. So, you know, we've been in really nasty spots as a country before, but we've always emerged from those periods of time with incredible growth trajectory, with strength, with honor, with hope. And I think we're at that point again where we can have a Reagan-style revolution and come out of this with a mandate from the American people to really lead into the next generation. I think Montana is going to be that battleground. We are the race that will determine control of the Senate. I encourage people to go to timfremt.com and learn about me and the race. Donate if you can. But really, the point of this is there are three Senate seats we have to win this cycle. 6-year terms for senators. Every 2 years, a third of the Senate turns over. There are three races in 2024 we have to win: West Virginia, Ohio, Montana. After that, we're defensive for the rest of the decade. We can't flip any seats. And that means we can't retake the Senate till 2030. And if we don't retake the Senate, Chuck Schumer and the Democrats have been very clear. This isn't a conspiracy theory. They've said what they want to do. They want to end the filibuster, which means they can then add two more states, D.C. and Puerto Rico, which, of course, would immediately add four Democrat senators, and expand the Supreme Court and pack that court with justices that align with their ideology. That's a structural threat to the future of America. That's a structural change that will take 1 to 2 generations to undo. That's how important this race is. If we don't win Montana, we will win West Virginia, I'm very confident. Manchin retired, Jim Justice is rolling in. That's 50-50. That leaves up to the White House. If we lose the White House, we're right back where we are now, you know, with tie-breaking votes coming in every time. And Kamala Harris has broken more ties than any other vice president in history, and that's due to one person, John Tester. Because every time there's these close votes and you hear the whispers in the wind of the names, you know, who's, you know, Sinema, Manchin, Murkowski, Susan Collins, you know, who's going to cross the aisle and pass, you know, this legislation? Tester's name was never mentioned. He's never in that Navy column. You know exactly where he's going to be, and that's in lockstep with Chuck Schumer. So this is a very important race, and I encourage Americans, whether you know anything about Montana or not, whether you've been here, whether you care about Montana, you need to care about this race because it has national implications, and it will impact the next generation of Americans.
I feel like I'm ready to, like, fight. You've given me so much hope. It's easy to, like you said, it's easy to kind of look at what's happening and feel pretty grim. Because a lot of the stuff we're seeing is pretty chilling. But you've reminded me, just for perspective, again, in my young years, it's hard to really understand our history and where we've been before. But truly, it is people like you who give me hope. So I just feel revitalized talking to you. Mention your website one more time so people can know where to go to support you and ultimately, of course, the state of Montana, but much broader than that, the future of this country.
Thank you. TimForMT.com, four spelled out, TimForMT.com. Obviously, socials, we're all over social media and all the platforms. You can follow us and follow the race. You know, we're neck and neck now. We're pulling ahead. But the tide is with us. The winds are with us. Montanans, you know, who went 20 points for Trump, are really frustrated about what's happening, and this is the race to win. So please visit our socials, visit our website, and spread the word to your friends. You know, we have to get more people engaged, broadly speaking, in American politics, but especially, you know, folks like you. We need to get the younger generation engaged. I didn't get involved in politics until I was 35. I'm 38 now. But, you know, we need to get younger Americans engaged because ultimately they're the ones who are going to have to bear the consequences of what's happening. So they're the ones who should be the most interested in what's going on, and they should get engaged earlier rather than later. And it's up to folks like you and I to make sure that they know the facts, and when they're engaged, they're having an impact.
Amazing. Well, thank you for joining. We will certainly be following along with your success and everything you accomplish. And again, we thank you for your service. It's remarkable and just very admirable. So thank you.
Thanks for what you're doing. It's an important fight. Keep it up.
I don't know how anyone could listen to that episode, hear what he was saying, and not wholeheartedly agree and support him. Make sure to support him. You're going to tim4mt.com. It is important. It is crucial. It is necessary that we get behind him. We are supporting him if you can financially, but of course through social media. This is the kind of man who we eventually want to run for president. He will have my vote when he does. It's amazing. He's young. He served this country. He knows what's at stake. He's got young children. It's truly remarkable and admirable. And again, his service does not go unnoticed and unthanked. But thank you guys for tuning in. Again, tim4mt.com. Make sure you check us out, the Gains for Girls podcast at outkick.com. Like, subscribe anywhere where you get your podcasts, and we will see you again next week.